Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to American Conservative Party Radio. I'm Tracy.
And I'm Bill.
And we're going to host tonight's episode of Weekly Conservative Talk, and we're going to have a little bit of fun at somebody's expense tonight.
Wouldn't have any idea who we might be talking about.
Well, we'll see.
Okay.
This has been an odd week.
Hmm.
Since we were last on. Everybody knows I like to play golf. Everybody should know that I like to play in the summer. And everybody should know that I really like the super hot, super humid weather, because that's the day I want to be on the golf course.
Yep.
And today was that day.
And you didn't get to go.
I didn't get to go.
You see, I knew that, folks. Not everybody else would, because I know what happened to Tracy last Friday.
Okay, here's the deal. Last Friday, CJ and I were out wandering about. We had things to do, places to go, people to see. And I decided I was going to run over to the office to do a little bit of work for like 20 minutes. And CJ said, well, you know, I don't want to sit over there all day. It's nice. And I said, well, I understand that. We'll just pop in there, do something, go grab lunch, head back home. Somebody else decided they wanted to pop into a restaurant we were driving by. Unfortunately, they did it by turning left in front of me at 30 miles an hour.
Oh, boy.
My car, immediate stop. Their car, not so immediate stop. They spent a little bit of time on two wheels.
Oh, my gosh.
And they weren't a motorcycle.
Yep.
Before they pounded back down onto four wheels, and everybody within 50 feet, you could see it. I mean, I noticed it a good and solid minute later. There was at least five cars at that intersection, and people had cell phones to their ears.
Oh, my gosh.
Cops said they got seven calls.
You know, that's good. That's
that
good.
Was
yeah.
That was good. You know, and people were yelling out the window, do you need an ambulance?
Yeah.
And I'm walking to the other car going, I don't think so. But I will suggest this. It's really, really weird. I've had several pretty bad accidents. I've had two head-on collisions in my
Wow.
life. And if you've ever had an accident or anything bad has happened, you know time dilation occurs, things slow, you know, and then it happens and then things pick up right away.
Yep.
This didn't for me. This went into slow motion as soon as the car went in, and I realized we're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
Things went into slow motion, and they stayed that way for about, it felt like maybe 20 or 30 seconds after the accident, but it was
Wow.
probably less, you know,
Yeah.
maybe 5 or 10 seconds, but it stayed that way after the accident. Which
Wow.
is really kind of weird for me. I've never had that experience before. And I turned. CJ was in the front seat. And she looked at me, and she goes, ow.
Ow.
So we unbuckled, and I got out of the car and went over to the other car to make sure that everyone was okay there. Two people in that car. The driver looked like she was having a heart attack. I understand that feeling, given the fact that, you know, she had just, you know, had her car flipped up on its side and, you know, crashing back. But, she was okay. Everybody got some bruises, some twists. But in the end, both cars drove away.
Really?
Yeah. You know, I pulled away and they pulled away. And it could have easily been a lot worse.
Yeah.
If she had been alone in their car, she probably would have flipped. She had her husband in the passenger side. He's a pretty big guy, so he's probably like about 6 foot, you know, 250, 280, somewhere in that area.
Wow.
So he probably helped keep them from flipping over.
Yep.
Their side airbags deployed,
protecting
him. Our front airbags did not deploy, and I'm going to be having a few words with Saab. I'm impressed by the amount of damage and the impact, the lesser amount of damage than I would have expected from an impact of that speed. It was probably somewhere around 25, 30 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was kind of surprised at how little damage. I mean, they're going to total my car.
Mm-hmm.
It's old enough, and there's enough damage that it looks like they're going to total it, which is a nice thing and a bad thing at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I want to talk about. It's not the accident, which, just to give you a point, obviously I've been spending a lot of time talking to insurance people the last couple of days, and my response to the insurance company for the other driver, because he did get ticketed, and I did not, for turning left in front of me, I told the insurance company, I said, your idea of making me whole and my idea of making me whole are not going to be the same thing. Because the insurance company is going to pay off my car and then take it.
Yes, they will.
So last Friday, I was driving around. This coming Friday, I'm not going to be driving around. Not in that car. So I'm not going to be whole.
Nope.
You know, yes, they are paying off the loan. Thank you very much. I had gap insurance. That's going to be nice. But the reality is, I am now out of a car. And yes, I don't have to worry about a payment, but I'm still out of a car.
That's right.
And, you know, now, if Allstate, who is the insurer on the other side, would loan me $10,000, and I can go out and buy a car, and I'll pay them the same amount that I was paying on my other car loan,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I can replace my car with, you know, $10,000, which is about what I owed on my other vehicle, you know, then I would consider it to be whole. Then I'll be back where I was.
Exactly.
You know, $10,000
car, $300
payment.
Yep.
Yeah, and, you know, driving around. That's whole, in my opinion. That's not what they're going to do.
Hmm. Have they made an offer yet?
No.
I see. Mm.
I do have a rent car, which was kind of not a great idea, but, you know, I needed it, I've got it, so I'm using it.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, CJ and I both, we went to the ER just to get checked out.
Yep.
They took x-rays of my shoulder because it is sore.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know why it's sore, frankly. I mean, I know why, but I don't know what I did to cause it to be sore.
Right.
So, and it's not the side that the seatbelt's on. It was actually the other side, which kind of makes sense if it got swung around because of the seatbelt,
mm-hmm.
because of the impact.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
CJ has a really bright purple and yellow bruise on her knee.
Ow.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And she did a little whack on her head as she went back into the seat. Fortunately, not much one, but, you know, That was what her owl was. TJ called it a really bad amusement ride gone really bad. You know?
I get it.
You know, I have watched cars meet, and, you know, it wasn't fun.
Yeah.
It really wasn't fun. And things were a little bit odd. Things were a little bit odd for me. For, you know, that accident really rung my bell. It really did.
Yes, indeed.
So, but the thing I want to talk about, and this is a segue into Obamacare.
Oh, boy.
Okay, now, I want you all to think about this. We have car insurance. Most of us have cars. We have car insurance.
Yep.
We have car insurance because we might get into an accident.
Yes, indeed.
I drive probably somewhere around between 15 and 18,000 miles a year when we don't go on vacation. When we go on vacation, add another 5 to 7,000 miles to that. Now, you know, 20,000 miles is a fair amount of driving for the average person. But over the last 20 years, you know, that has certainly added up. I'm well over 500,000 miles. At this point in my life, I drive enough, and I've been driving enough, where accidents, you know, just by numbers alone, just the sheer number of miles that I'm driving, suggests that I'm going to be in situations where accidents could occur. And given the fact that I'm in, you know, relatively, and I'm, please don't get carried away, Madison is a metropolitan area, you know, there's more prone to that accident. And that's a really sucky intersection that I was at. Anyways, there was a big old Pepsi truck turning left in the left-hand turn in the left lane. I was in the right lane. She was turning left in front of us. She could not have seen me coming. The truck would have absolutely blocked her vision. But, you know, in those situations, you creep out. You don't jump out. And she certainly felt like it jumped out to me. But we have insurance to protect us from those potential events.
Yes.
Now, I told Victoria that I didn't think gap insurance was a good idea. She really wanted it on this car. We got it. Thank goodness. You know, so, you know, if they total it, it's going to pay off for us. The idea of insurance for when big things happen makes sense.
Yes, it does.
Of course, when the headlamp goes out, I need to change it. I don't, you know, go to my insurance company and say, well, the light burned out.
Yeah,
I don't
right.
go to the insurance company and say, hey, you know, my car needs an oil change. These things don't happen. House insurance, same thing. But not medical insurance. Medical insurance, it seems like, you know, I got a hangnail. Insurance pay it. You know, I got a sniffle. Insurance pay it. You know, Obama is getting to the point where they want to make that even easier. And I think that is the problem in general with insurance for medical purposes. But insurance as it's become known to us, paid by our insurer, we don't see the costs. You know, the people that don't have insurance obviously see the costs. I don't have health insurance, so I see the cost. Victoria doesn't have health insurance. Boy, we've seen that cost over the last year.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, both our medical providers and our, you know, medical staff have worked really hard to minimize as much as possible those costs
for
us in the process. Now, that's great. But you can bet that they don't do that for the people that have insurance.
Oh, absolutely not.
And we can be... Initially, people think that that's how Obamacare is going to work. Every little hangnail, every little sniffle, you're just going to go and it's going to get taken care of. Well, it's not going to happen that way.
No, no.
First of all, somebody has to pay for it.
Yes.
Somebody does have to pay for it. Whether it's an insurance company, yourself, or the federal government, somebody is going to have to come up with money to pay for those hangnails and things. And pretty soon people are going to find out that they're not interested in paying for everybody else's hangnails.
That's true.
And so the choice will be either raise the taxes to pay for everybody's hangnails or stop paying for hangnails.
Yes.
And
other things.
Sniffles.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sprained shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go take 2 aspirin and go home.
Yep.
Or, you know, come back in 3 weeks and if it's still hurting, we'll check it then.
Mm-hmm.
Any of those things, you know, we expect as a society to be made whole. We want somebody to fix what has gone wrong. And I am obviously stand accused of thinking that because, you know, frankly, I got screwed and I want to be made whole. Now, I don't really care about the insurance company paying for it. You know, I am looking at the very nice lady who was very distraught on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly feel for her, you know, feeling that way. However, I'm also looking at her going, you know, you need to fix my car.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not looking to the government. I'm not necessarily looking to the insurance company. But I'm certainly looking at her going, you know, everybody has an accident. I understand that. I'm certainly not thinking you were malicious in front and pulling in front of me.
Nope.
But I do want you to fix it.
Yes.
Okay. And I'd like you to make me whole because, you know, Friday afternoon, I was minding my own business. So
yep.
That's kind of how I want, people are going to face this idea of Obamacare as this be end all. And of course, Victoria feels the same way, although I think she's getting the idea that it's not going to work out quite the way she wants it to.
Mm-hmm.
And so she
mm-hmm.
has become a little bit less enamored with the idea of national health care. Because,
good.
You know, we have spent somewhere in the vicinity of $75,000 to $80,000 in her medical care over the last 18 months.
Wow.
And we're not done. It's,
nope.
You know, she's still working at healing. So there's some ways to go on there. And, of course, she looks at it and going, you know, we've got this big debt that's overhanging us, going to be there for a very long time, you know, everything else being equal. And, you know, she looks at Obamacare as a way to prevent that in the future. And my problem is, you know, they're going to look at her with diabetes
mm-hmm.
and high blood pressure
mm-hmm.
and obesity.
Mm-hmm.
And serious eye situations where she's blind in one eye,
mm-hmm.
and rheumatoid arthritis,
mm.
and they're kind of going to go, you know, you're not worth it.
Exactly.
And they're going to, I honestly believe they're going to say, you know, you're going blind anyways with diabetes, you know, you can live with those cataracts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she's getting the idea that that's actually going to happen. That she's reaching a point in time in her life where the medical community under Obamacare is going to ration the health care to the people that it's going to have the best impact on.
Absolutely.
And the people with chronic illnesses, you know, it's, you know, Band-Aid care, it's important to them. It's certainly a quality of life issue,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think Obamacare has anything to do with quality of life.
No, I think it's cost-benefit.
Right. It's cost-benefit analysis. And as
yep.
an economist, I can tell you that Victoria is a lost cause.
Oh, sure. Older folks are.
Right. On that basis, you know, they are. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm one of those people that have been arguing, as most conservatives had, that, you know, Obamacare is a really bad idea, but I also understand the general impulse that exists because I'm there. Of course, I pay for my car insurance,
mm-hmm.
and I pay for it rather, you know, not so dearly as much now as I did when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
the advantage of getting old and not in lots of accidents has reduced my insurance costs. Of course,
absolutely,
they're not so happy with me with two accidents in 6 months.
No, they aren't.
But I didn't cause either one of them. I didn't cause either one of them. So, you know, somebody else is paying the bill on both of those. Unfortunately, the first one, my insurance company was her insurance company, so my insurance company's paying all around on that one.
Yep, they sure
are. All right, there's somebody else on the other phone, and, you know, I almost can guarantee that it's a certain person that will have an opinion about insurance.
No, you think?
You think? Caller, sign in, please.
Good evening.
Rick. Hey, Rick, what's going on?
Oh, not a lot. Just kind of ready to blow off some steam tonight.
Okay.
Blow off some steam.
Well, it's got nothing to do with insurance. It's got to do with hypocrisy.
Oh.
Well, hey. I'm almost the biggest hypocrite around here, only because I weigh 350 pounds, and I bet that means I outweigh both of you.
Yeah, you do me.
That's true, but that's got nothing to do with what I'm angry about tonight.
Okay.
Talk to me.
Spill your guts, Rick.
Have you been looking at the Fox News website at all in the last day?
No.
Nope, I've been busy.
Okay, well, I hadn't either until this morning, and been all over the national news about Mark Sanford going walkabout.
Uh-huh.
Yep, saw that.
Yep.
Okay. Well, the thing that got me about it is, you know, whether he's in the right or wrong, going off the radar for a couple of days is beside the point. Some of the opinions that I saw from the, I guess, good old boys in our state legislature, that he should be impeached for it because he went hiking for a couple of days and that he needs to undergo psychiatric evaluation because he went on a couple of days getaway.
Really?
Well, one, I don't think he should be impeached.
Right.
Two, if somebody wants to go on a walkabout, you know, hey, that's up to them, and I don't care if he's the governor of the state. You know, he's
right.
A human being. He gets to get away for a couple of days without a whole lot of people bugging him. I am kind of curious about the fact that his wife didn't know where he was.
Yeah. Well,
or at least
she says she did.
Yeah, she knew he was, didn't know exactly where he was, but she knew round about where he was. The Appalachian Trail's about 3,000 miles long.
Okay, so she knew that he was going to go hiking, and, as far as I'm concerned, you know, if his lieutenant governor knew that he was going to be somewhat out of touch and made sure that he was staying somewhere close at hand, then I don't have any problem with that. I don't have any problem with it.
Right.
Of course, if it's your legislators, the Democrats that are pushing this, it's the same type of crap that Sarah Palin's getting, for every time she does anything that's not exactly perfectly in tune with what people think she should be doing as, a governor.
Right.
You know what? I don't have any problem with Barack Obama taking his daughters out for ice cream on Sunday.
I don't either.
I don't have any problem with Barack Obama taking his wife out on a date. I don't have any problem with Barack Obama going on to the River Seine and, having dinner with his family, sans, Sarkozy. Don't have any problem with that. You know, the man has a life. He has a family. He needs to keep, some kind of balance in there.
Exactly.
Of course, now I have a slight objection to the fact that he spends $250,000 doing it.
Right.
But, I do understand that, but I don't have a problem with him doing it. I'm just having a problem with him doing it. And I think this idea of, giving him kind of crap because the Iranians are protesting and he's having ice cream with his daughter. Well, I made some snarky little comments over the weekend, too. Let them eat cake, let me eat my ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But I don't have any problem with him doing that. What's he going to do? Sit there staring at a phone going, if they need me, I'm going to be right here. Yeah, please. you know, and if Mark Sanford wants to take a little hike, let him go take a hike.
Right. Well, then, see, this is where it gets into, I guess, my personal beliefs, and a lot of people that I know around here's where it really got stuck in our craw, is the state legislator who was recommending that he undergo psychiatric evaluation is the same who was also a member of the same of his party.
Mm.
Name, anyway, who pushed when he refused steadfastly to accept stimulus money, took it to the state Supreme Court to force him to take it.
Mm.
The same guy.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's the head of the Judiciary Committee of the state who put those Supreme Court justices on the bench in South Carolina. The same ones who forced him to take the stimulus money.
Well, you know what?
Politics is a funny business.
Yes,
yeah,
it is.
That's what you're telling me sounds like a really good reason to see if there's somebody that can run against that idiot.
Yep.
Yes, you're very right.
Okay. But idiots are going to be idiots. And you know, there's only one seriously good insurance policy against idiots. Called the Darwin Award.
Yes.
I can be pretty certain that over time, you know, idiots have a tendency to do stuff that weeds them out. And that's all I can hope for.
Yep.
And that you're very right.
Like, and because that, everybody just, knows, and I've said this often enough, you know, that if I was in charge, I'd take care of the idiots. That's why nobody puts me in charge.
Yeah, right.
Because I frankly make, you know, Ahmadinejad look pretty tame by comparison. somebody suggested that what are you asking Obama to do with Iran? And I'm saying, look, what he needs to say is we stand for the Iranian people. We think that they should be allowed to be free. We think that the dictatorial, you know, mullahs need to be, you know, put back in the mosques and out of the, you know, public square. And, you know, he should say all those things. But if he were me, what he'd do is he'd nuke Iran or put big walls around it.
Or both.
And that's why I'm not ever going to be president, because everybody wants to keep me really far away from that little football. Which is an intelligent thing. I'm suggesting that, you know, there are smarter people in the world that, you know, will keep me away from those things. But
Tracy, I'm, you know, when we talk about what should Obama say, you're kind of right. I think the contrast that I would like to draw is, what was it that Reagan did with Poland? And what was it that Reagan did with East Germany? He goes to West Germany, putting on to Iraq, and he could have said, tear down those walls. He could have talked to the grand poobahs in Iraq, the mullahs there, and said, folks, You need to talk some sense into these people. They're killing you. They're killing your people. They're killing the people that believe the same thing that you do.
No. You know,
yes,
don't want him to do that. I don't want him to do that.
Well, I think it's better than what he actually did.
Oh, okay. Standing up and talking would have been better than what he actually did.
Yep.
Okay. He could have gone, you know, Sarkozy, ditto.
Mm-hmm.
And could have walked off, and I would have been happier. You know? No, I don't want him. God, no. I don't want him getting that involved in the Middle East. You know, because he's going to screw shit up so bad, it's pathetic. you know, because he's going to say all the right things for all the wrong people.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with that, but at the same time, I'm saying I think it's instructive to look at the difference in how similar situations were handled.
And that's fine, I understand that. I think this is, you know, I think the advantage that Reagan had, and I believe it or not, this is what I actually, I do believe this, rather than just as an argument position. Reagan had an advantage with dealing with Russia that we don't have dealing with Iran. As cold as the Cold War was, we were engaged with Russia extensively for decades.
Yes.
You know, by the time the mid-60s, late-60s came up there, you know, we were engaged with them on a recurring and regular basis.
Yes,
we don't have that with Iran. You know, we've got them sitting at their side of the field, you know, lobbing rocks and Molotov cocktails and hurling epithets at us, you know, and, you know, we're standing there going, you know, with our arms folded going, nyeh, 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 nyeh. You know, and nothing else is going on other than that. There's no engagement. There's no way to, you know, put them in a position of that, you know, Reagan was able to put Gorbachev in. You know, so I understand the distinction that you're trying to make, and I agree. It's certainly useful to look at the fact that, you know, Reagan didn't back down in those situations, and he certainly didn't take a political posture
right
in those situations.
Exactly.
And that kind of gets me to something that somebody wrote over the week, earlier on in the week, which was like yesterday.
Yeah.
I keep thinking today's Thursday. It's been a long couple of days.
It's, yeah, I've been a
day. They asked, is Obama a coward or is he curious or cautious? And so I'm asking you, not in the context of Obama, but I would like to ask you, what would your definition be of a coward?
Hmm. Well, I come from a military background, as do you, and that obviously colors my thinking. And we're talking about something different here. We're talking about cowardice in general as opposed to cowardice on a battlefield. Pretty easy to recognize cowardice on a battlefield. I think a little harder to recognize that when you talk about political stances and foreign relations and even domestic relations. So I'm... As a first stab, I think I would say that cowardice on a foreign relations or a political basis is running from or avoiding a conflict that has to be resolved.
Okay. I like that. I wrote that question down, then I wrote the word coward underneath it, and I put a little dash there, and I said, you know, I'm going to let this stew, and I'm not going to think about what I mean by coward until, actually, I had a chance to ask you.
Ah.
But
cool.
I wasn't necessarily going to listen for your answer.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to start working on a formulation there. But I like your formulation. I think I like that definition. But think about all the things that I've been saying for the last year and a half, almost 2 years. Not about a year and a half. And think about our founding ideas as far as the American Conservative Party is concerned. One of the biggest things that I harped on over and 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 over again were principles.
Yep.
And so I'm thinking that a coward is somebody that runs from the principles they espouse when those principles cause them discomfort.
Hmm. Well, I like that one too.
You know, now, I can't say that Barack Obama is a coward based on my definition.
No, you wouldn't be able to.
I would suggest that he might be a coward under your formulation.
Yes.
But he lacks principle, and therefore he is not abandoning them because it's uncomfortable. His only principle is political expediency, and by that criteria, he is acting perfectly rationally.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to walk the fence, not pissing off anybody on either side too much that he won't be able to, you know, smooth over the ruffled feathers once things, you know, flesh themselves out. But I do think that you're right. I have a military background, and so cowardice from that perspective is clear. But cowardice on a, you're running from a fight. You're running from something that needs to be faced,
yeah.
Either personally or, in your general life or even in the larger circle of your existence.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, I don't know that he's running away from that either. I think he wants to, his approach is, I don't want to fight for my principles, let's negotiate. And so he wants to avoid when the loud banging and yelling and screaming is going on and then get back to the more, cordial, let's negotiate type situation. And so the demonstrators are creating a noisy environment for him.
Hmm.
I don't know that he's running away from it. I just don't think he feels comfortable in that situation.
Well, I think it's obvious he doesn't feel comfortable. I mean, absolutely. I guess my observation would be this. It's pretty easy, again, to look at actions at a low level, the private or the corporal or whomever, and make a determination, did they act in a cowardly fashion or did they not? When you get up into the strategic ranks, it becomes a whole lot harder to separate strategic moves from cowardly moves. Because it's as a strategist, you can say, look, yes, we need to do something, but we need to do that, and I would absolutely expect Obama to say smartly. And I think it will be a smarter thing to do by doing this. Now, you can't say, under my definition, he avoided a conflict that he didn't want to face that has to be resolved, because in his viewpoint, he's not avoiding it. He's waiting until the battlefield, if you would, is prepped. So it makes it a lot harder to make a distinction there.
Okay, so what you're suggesting to me is, and this is, I said this very recently, is that he's being rather nuanced about it.
The N-word never leaves my lips. I hate that word.
Yeah, because, you know...
It's an ugly word. It is a cowardly word.
Sure, it's obscuring what should be clear.
Yes, absolutely.
So he's got this, you know, he's taking in the big picture. He's looking at the broader perspective.
Mm.
He's considering all the potential angles, and he's approaching it with a much more careful and considered, nuanced approach. Oh, man,
mm-hmm.
I am so more meat and potatoes than that.
Yep.
It's certainly, Foggy Bottom. It is certainly a State Department type mentality
mm-hmm.
that just drives me crazy.
Crazy. Yep. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I will tell you when, for me, when the rulers of Iran crossed the line. And that moment was the moment that I saw in the video that Nita got shot. You know, beating somebody up, that isn't good. You ought not to do that. But those people are out there. They know what kind of treatment they can expect. If they stand their ground, if they stand their ground in numbers, that will stop. When your rulers start killing you, you've crossed the line.
Well,
and that was the line for me.
I didn't have the same response. I've seen bystanders, end up, victims, and I don't attribute any more to the event because a bystander gets, hurt or killed than I would have originally. Frankly, and I don't think anybody is going to be surprised by this, one life does not make that much of a difference to me.
Mm-hmm.
And
I understand what you're saying.
So, the mullahs crossed the line, in my mind, in 1978, they've been way past that line for a long time, and
yeah.
they made no effort to try and come back to it. So everything to that just continues to put there. Now, last week, we talked about my general opinion about Iran.
Yeah.
Obviously, people should be getting the idea that there's been some shift in my general opinion. And I tried to put down in words what that shift was. And I'm going to read what I wrote. On the radio show on Tuesday, I talked about my indifference to Iran as a blow-up over the election between a really bad man and a really crazy man. It is clear that while that might have been day one or day two, the Iranians realized that the fraud was the one the mullahs had perpetuated with the concept of free elections. The Iranian people had realized that, one, they want real democracy, not a false choice between two chosen candidates. That their government isn't their government, it's a theocracy that imposes upon the people what it will not abide upon itself, adherence to principles. Now, not principles I would ever ascribe to, but the point of having principles is to live by them.
Yes.
So it has become, hey, you cheated my candidate, to the whole thing is a farce, you've been cheating us.
Yes.
When that change, when I recognize, and I think at some point, the Iranian people have recognized that it wasn't just a stolen election, that it's in fact stolen freedom that's on the line here. It's not how one election's turned out, but how all elections are being run in general. I think when the Iranians started reaching that point in for themselves is the point that I started going, okay, now you're getting the point. Now there's something here to be cheering for.
Yep.
Because I could not cheer, you know, for the two candidates that they were screaming about. You know,
right.
Frankly, a crazy man and a bad man, you know, that's not even the lesser of two evils.
Right.
You know, it's the greater of two evils that they're fighting about. And I got no use for that. There's no reason for me to expend any mental capital on that argument. But shifting it from you stole my election to you stole my freedom, okay, now I can jump into that.
Yep.
I can be a little bit more, you know, open to the idea that you need to be more involved. And at that point, I think Barack Obama should have made a similar switch.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it became no more this candidate or that candidate. Now it became theocracy, freedom. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, thugocracy versus liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Repression versus, you know, a free people. At that point, I think Barack Obama should have recognized a similar change. I don't consider myself to be the most brilliant person on the planet. I am pretty smart. But, you know, I think there's enough people standing around Barack Obama that they probably could have reached a similar conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I think, you know, the State Department would have said, hey, this has shifted from an election issue to a freedom issue. Now we need to say something.
Yes. Absolutely.
And the only thing I'm interested in hearing from Barack Obama at this point is an apology, which he seems to be pretty capable of doing.
Oh, he's past master at that one.
I want to see him make an apology to the Iranian people.
Mm.
Sorry, I've been missing in action for the last week. I support you.
Yeah.
Now, that's all he needs to say. I apologize to the Iranian people for being missing in action. I support you.
And he doesn't even have to say, and he doesn't even have to say you. He said, I support freedom throughout the world. He doesn't have to make it personal.
Oh, well, no, he can't do that. Bush did that. He can't do that.
No,
otherwise, he's going to be, you know, no.
I forgot the politics of that. I'm sorry.
You know.
I was thinking of him as a rational person.
You know, he's been fighting against being a Bush Light for 6 months, and as we can all tell, he's pretty much been Bush number three right down the line.
Right down the line. Just
so. You know,
cosmetically and verbally, no. In actual fact and what he actually does, you bet.
Right. So, you know, the idea of him actually taking a phrase out of George Bush's lexicon and actually using it,
that's a non-starter.
Who was doing that? There was there was a comedy sketch where some character, was it Jim Carrey, in Liar Liar, maybe it was some there where he was trying to say what he really meant, and the whole idea of him actually getting the word out was just like not possible.
Oh, yep, yeah.
You know,
I think it was Carrie in Liar Liar.
So, you know, that's Barack Obama when it comes to I stand for liberty and freedom. He's going to go, I stand for... I fully support... I think that they're really... it's just not going to come out.
No,
I think that a government like ours... would be it's just not going to happen, you know, there might be lots of things that happen to men when they become president. But I don't think he can actually speak the words freedom, liberty, and democracy in a phrase that would suggest that he supports any of the above. When for most of his life he has done exactly the opposite.
Yep.
So that's my, you know, that is where I have flowed as far as my position is concerned. You've been extremely active, William, in the Twitter verse as far as Iran is concerned.
Absolutely.
I don't know how much of a principal you have been in that, but it appears from my appearances that you have gotten yourself deeply involved in that process.
Well, I thank you for that. I don't think of myself as a principal in that. My contribution to that is, for the very most part, retweeting what is going out from people that are in Iran or who are in contact with people that are in Iran. And I think the more that story gets out, the more people become aware, the more pressure there will be on government at whatever level to take some kind of a stand in support of freedom. I'd like to comment a little bit about one of the things that you wrote and the epiphany, if you would, that you had. And that is this. You said, when it shifted from you stole the election from our guy to not only did you steal an election, but your elections have been a farce for as long as we have had them. And at that moment, Mousavi, who is the at least titular head of this Green Revolution, became inconsequential. I have seen probably three or four tweets from people in Iran that have said, this is not about Mousavi. This is about our freedom. We need a leader. And they were obviously not considering Mousavi as being that leader, because you are absolutely right. I'm a dinner jacket, and Mousavi are cut from the same cloth, simply in a different style. There is no fundamental difference between their previous statements from each other.
Right.
They both hate Israel. They both are committed to Iran becoming a nuclear power. They both have referred to, although that's been absent here a little bit lately, as the U.S. as being the great Satan. There is no real fundamental difference. On that, B. Hussein Obama was correct. What he hasn't realized is that it has shifted from both of those people to a nation looking for actual freedom, not freedom in name, not freedom in rigged elections, not freedom in, oh gosh, they'll let us wear Western clothes. They're looking for actual freedom to be able to choose their own leaders that have not been previously vetted. And I applaud them, and I stand with them.
Well, I think that there was probably a core group of people that had that in mind, and could never really get it out. And I think a vast majority of people in Iran have realized that the freedom to say what they have known for a long time.
Yes.
And you know, a brutal regime can keep, you know, individuals in check.
Mm-hmm.
But the mob is an entirely different animal.
Oh, yeah.
And once the mob gets it in their head, you know, that the individual, you know, and it's kind of weird. You know, bear with me on this. Once the mob understands that the individual is no longer important, you know, individual members of the mob are no longer important, then individual freedom becomes something worth fighting for. And, you know, I think now whether everything that's been, you know, attributed to what Nita has said is true, I she got that. If what was been reported, she said, is true, then she got that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that individual rights are not for a society, you know, an individual thing. We all have to, you know, fight for them.
Yeah.
And it's kind of along lines that something that I have suggested for a long time, since I've been involved with ACP, is that I am strongly supportive of the general idea that individual rights trump the state, and they absolutely trump society. You know, I know you and I have some disagreement on that particular point, but the reality is, for me, you know, until the individual is more important than society, you can't have society. I can go to you and say, my rights are more important than society. And if you go, yes, I agree with you, your rights are more important than society, then I say, Bill, you have every single solitary right that I have, and I will respect the fact that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have a society based upon individual rights.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as society can say, yeah, your individual rights are suspect, your individual rights are not as important as other individual rights, then there is no, then society has abdicated its ability to support individual rights. Then society is saying, society is more important than the individual. And yes, I agree, it absolutely requires a whole shitload of intelligent, rational, adult human beings willing to make that acknowledgement. And we have a whole shitload of really stupid morons that won't do so.
That's true.
But I
and
am it, not
and
going...
And in fact, that whole shitload of those stupid morons is the reason that we have so many laws on the books today.
Right, and you know, I am of the mind that I am not going to support, you know, babysitting all the morons and giving up my rights to do so.
Okay.
So as an adult, I don't want to be treated like a moron idiot because there's a whole shitload of moron idiots.
Yes, absolutely.
So my rights are going to be tantamount and primary, you know, above society. I will recognize, you know, when I went back to live with my parents after I was divorced,
mm-hmm.
and my parents made that offer for me to come back and I can go back to college,
mm-hmm.
you know, they said, you know, if you come back and go to college, you can stay here.
Mm-hmm.
I said, great. Here's my rule. No house rules.
Yeah.
You know, and of course my parents said, well, this is our house. And I said, and I will respect that. But at that time I was 28 and been out on my own for 10 years, you know, 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need house rules.
Mm-hmm.
And we got along fine for years.
Mm-hmm.
We have 40 seconds. Say whatever you want.
Just thank you for the great conversation tonight. I don't think any of my CT buddies are listening, but if you are, then a big shout-out to you. Folks, think about what we said. You need to be thinking about those issues.
Bill, thanks for a good week. Good work as far as your Twitter world is concerned. I'm going to continue to pay attention to you. Everyone else, if you're not on Twitter, you should be. and we will talk again next week. No more show prep. I'm liking this idea.
I'm liking it. It's working.
We're off.
Okay. Yep, I like that show. That was a good show.
Yeah.
Yep.
So did you have a list of things you wanted to talk about, or were you just going to...
Actually, we got into the two things that I was going to talk about. I just didn't get my particular point of view in, but that's fine, because I know that we will be talking about them again, and I will get them in there. The first one was on healthcare, and I was going to make the observation that B. Hussein, in front of the AMA, when he gave his speech about we can't wait, we have to do this, and all that kind of stuff, and he made the same statement that he made on the campaign trail, which is, if you like your doctor, you're not going to have to change doctors. If you like your insurance, you aren't going to have to change your insurance. 2 days after that speech to the AMA, just, I don't know, a couple, 3 days ago, the White House press office says, well, you can't take his words literally. And it was like, excuse me, this is the guy who's standing up saying this is my policy and I can't take his words literally? Okay, fine.
No, you can't take his words literally.
No.
I agree.
I mean, not even when they're plain spoken, you can't take them literally.
Right.
It's just...
So maybe Gibbs was being honest.
Oh, I'm sure he was, but it's probably one of those gaffe kinds of honesties where they inadvertently tell the truth, you know?
Can't let that happen too often.
Oh, man, no. He'll be out of a job if he lets that happen too often. So, but that was really the point that I wanted to bring up, and from that, I was going to talk a little bit about, you know, it really is, regardless of court decisions and all that kind of stuff, that not only can candidates, but people who are actually elected to office can lie to you. I mean, I'm sorry, that's just wrong. It's just plain wrong.
Well, there is a, in that album, Pink Floyd album, Animals,
mm-hmm.
which you said you never heard?
Nope.
You should listen to it because it's, if you can, you should listen to it. The, there's a cut in there when they're talking about pigs. They're absolutely talking about politicians.
Yeah, how cool.
and one of the things it says in there is, you have to be trusted by the people you lie to. So that when they turn their backs on you,
mm-hmm.
you can stick the knife in.
Oh, I see.
You know?
Oh, man.
And this idea that, you know, you have to get people to trust you before you can screw them,
mm-hmm.
you know, is, of course, true in so many places, in so many ways.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, one of the other ways to say that is you can't cheat an honest man.
My initial response is, yeah, I can.
No, you can't. Not if they're honest. You can't you can't con an honest man. Not possible to do. Now, got a little greed and larceny in their soul? Yeah, okay.
I will concede the point only because I haven't tried.
I see, okay.
And until I try, I don't necessarily believe that stuff.
I see, all right.
When I was young, this will explain some of the depravity of my soul.
Oh, my God.
When I was young, junior in high sophomore in high school, second year of high school, I started realizing that people listen to me. That I had a certain amount of influence with people. Not just people that were, you know, friends or, you know, family, stuff like that, but even people on the periphery. And I found that to be a really weird concept. And so I was curious as to exactly how far that could go. And, of course, a teenager has no sense of morality.
None.
No sense of ethics.
Nope.
And no sense of limitation.
That's right.
And I won't go into the whole story, but just suggest to you that that day at school, I had pretty much the whole, you know, a very large segment of the student body believing that I had suffered a horrible, you know, terrible event, and that that I needed to be given a certain amount of deference and space because of this horrible event.
Yeah.
And this went on all day. And as the day was coming to an end, I was beside myself. I just could not imagine, because what was happening was people that I didn't know were coming up to me and giving me condolences.
Ah, yeah.
You know, and it was, it had extended to such a broad range of people that, when a teacher, when I walked into the class and the teacher just walked up, put their hand on my shoulder and just nodded and walked away, and I'm sitting there like going, this is too much. You know, and so I bowed my head and sniffled and left the room without asking permission or anything. And I went to a place where I was on the yearbook staff, and so I went to the yearbook office, and I went to the photographer's, because all the film was, hand-processed. I went to the dark room, and I closed the door, and I laughed so hard. So hard. People thought I was crying in there. Which just made it even worse. You know, an event, like 45 minutes later before I came out of there, there was like a whole room full of people going, oh, I'm like, this is ridiculous. And so, I just left. I just said, that's it, I'm done for the day, and I left. And I went, and I was still laughing about it, and then I stopped. I remember this so clearly. I stopped dead in my tracks and went, shit. And all I said to myself was, don't you ever do that again.
Yep. And actually, it's okay to do that again, but not in that way. You know what struck me when you were telling that story and you were talking about not only the people that you were directly involved with, but people that were peripheral in that contact with them? You know what the immediate thing was that sprung into my mind?
What?
Gee, that worked just like Twitter.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my own mindset at that point was that this is a skill. And it is a skill. This is
A little bit more than that, but yeah.
That needs to be really tightly controlled.
Yes.
And I am extremely good at it, and I use it to this day.
Sure.
But I have a very specific rule. you know, I will get you to do exactly what I want you to do,
mm-hmm.
but it's not going to be, it's not going to lack benefit for you.
Mm.
You know, I will not do that to somebody in a way that only benefits me.
Oh, yeah.
I can make it benefit both of us.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can't make it benefit both of us, then I'm not going to do it, even if it would benefit just me.
Well, sure.
I guess
mine is a little bit broader than that, in that I will use that as long as what I am using it for is true and not false.
Now, see, I will not concede that my perception of that
mm-hmm.
is accurate.
Ah. Well, okay. That's fine. Then don't use my definition.
Yeah,
it's worked for me.
You know, and that's fine because you know you have a set of principles that you're adhering to,
mm-hmm.
and you know you personally rely upon, you know, the foundation of those principles, you know, to establish a framework.
Anybody who has principles does that, I think.
I will not concede that my principles apply to you.
No. That's fine.
So I can't use my principles to define what I think is good for you.
Oh, no. That isn't what I was saying. I was commenting
yeah.
on what I was commenting on was that people use the foundation of their principles and their principles to inform them of their opinion and their view on any particular matter. And what I was suggesting is anybody who has principles, in fact, does that. Now, I may not agree. I will freely concede that B. Hussein Obama has principles. Unfortunately for him and for me, I think his principles are based on a false premise, and I think that his principles will allow him to lie to people. My principles won't. I will not knowingly lie to somebody. I may tell them something that I believe to be true that isn't true, but when I said it, I believed it to be true. But that's different than lying.
Yeah, my principles allow me to lie with impunity. So
really, okay,
absolutely.
See, I can't do that one. That
you know, but you got to understand. That a lie for the sake of telling a lie
mm-hmm.
is a waste of lie.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. There has to be a benefit to telling a lie. Otherwise, why bother? You know. Now, a lie told for my own benefit
mm-hmm.
and just my benefit
mm-hmm.
doesn't serve my purposes.
Okay.
For exactly the reason that pigs say that. You know, people don't trust liars.
That's true.
And
not if they know they've been lied to.
People know that somebody is a liar because it's easy to see when someone tells a lie that benefits only them.
Well, there's other ways.
They might get away with it for a little while, but they won't get away with it forever.
That's true.
But a lie that benefits a broader area, broader group than just me,
mm-hmm.
you know, is a lie that, you know, has value. There's places and times where that's, in my opinion, appropriate.
Hmm. Okay.
My principles do not have any compunction to prevent that. So, you know, it's always been, you know, I've said this to people. People don't believe me, you know, but I'm the meanest bitch you've ever met because,
yeah.
you know, I don't hold, as nice as people think that I am, I do not share the moral and ethical foundation that other people do. my moral and ethical foundation, you know, is distinctly different. Now,
okay.
I don't expect anybody to judge me. You know, you can judge me by that, and I don't
yeah, but what do you care?
Right, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't judge you by my set of standards because, first of all, they don't apply to you.
Right.
They can't apply to you.
Right.
Unless you say they do.
Well, unless I knowledgeably say that they do, yeah.
Yeah, if, you know, if you say...
That would imply that I know exactly what your standards and principles are.
Right. You know, but, and that's why I sit there and say, you know, someone comes up to me and says, I'm a Christian. You know, I now have a set of moral and ethical guidelines that I'm going to judge you by.
Hmm.
I'm not going to judge you by my moral and ethical standards.
Mm-hmm.
You can't live by them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, first of all, you don't know them, but at the same token, you
right.
I know you can't live by them because they happen to be mine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you've
sure.
you've defined your moral and ethical sets of guidelines. I am a Christian.
Yeah, you see, and I have a little bit of a problem with that. Because
certainly, because there's a broad, very broad range of what Christian means.
Exactly. And,
okay.
And so somebody comes up to you and says, I'm a Christian, you say, oh... Okay, I know what that standard is, when in fact, no, you don't really. You know what your generalized concept of it is, but you
right.
don't
and
know.
Right, and then what will happen is I will take your actions, your words,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and I will compare them to that framework, and I will see what you mean by that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? And if you say, you know, I'm a married man, and you know, I'm a Christian, and I believe in the sanctity of marriage,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I find you hugging and kissing somebody else, not your wife,
mm-hmm.
you know, in some,
yep.
you know, restaurant booth,
yep.
you know, I'm going to sit there and say, I don't have to judge you by anybody's rules than your own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm judging
right.
you by those rules, you have
right.
violated them.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, and, you know, when someone says, well, don't judge, and I say, bullshit.
We make judgments every day.
Yeah, you've established the criteria by which I'm going to judge you.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't establish that criteria. I didn't set the rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you did. And that's all I'm doing is I'm applying your own rules to you. People don't like that.
Well, no, because, I mean, nobody, very few people like to be held accountable.
And I'm willing to be held accountable to my rules.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
My yep. rules, not your rules, my
yeah,
rules.
That's right.
And, you know, you can, you know, if somebody wants to hold me accountable to their rules, I'm going to go, yeah, that's rather interesting. Ha, ha, ha. So
yeah,
what?
Right. Yeah, yeah, right.
Nope. I never said I was going to follow your rules to begin with.
That's right.
You know, and so that makes me, and I've suggested this to a lot of people, you know, for the average person, really dangerous. You know, and... But at the same time, they should feel really safe.
Sure.
You know, You know,
that's assuming that they give a shit about what you think or don't think about them, but yeah.
No, I'm not even concerned about what I might think or not think about somebody, because my actions... are going to be consistent with my set of rules.
Hmm.
And what did I say in the show today about my set of rules? The individual is irrelevant.
Well, and we disagree somewhat on that, but yeah, okay.
Right, but, you know, to the average person walking around in my life,
mm-hmm.
they're not relevant. I'm not going to waste my time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certainly not going to waste my energy, and I'm certainly not going to jeopardize any issues of me, you know, of my goals and plans, you know, over somebody else. Now, there is an exception to that, and I'm certain you understand that exception. You know, my immediate family has, you know, a significant role in my system.
Mm-hmm.
my, you know, rules, so that's a slightly different perspective.
Well, sure.
But the average person is relatively safe from me, despite the fact that I'm, you know, I have no compulsion towards lying or towards killing if that's what's necessary.
Yeah.
You know, the people say, well, that's kind of scary. I'm like, no, I wouldn't waste my time or energy on you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're relatively safe. You
yeah.
don't present any value to me in that sense that it's
nor
worth.
Do you present a threat.
Right, nor do you present a threat.
Right.
You know, and I'm as you know, as specific about threats as I am, you know, value. So
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's it is a point of view that is rather cold and calculated. That belief is from an outside point of view, and you know it misses the point.
Well, it misses your point.
It misses my point.
Yeah.
Tracy's first rule is always act in my own best interest.
Mm. That is or should be everybody's first rule.
It's nobody's first rule. You know, the vast majority of people in the world could not live by that rule, even if they tried.
Hmm.
You know,
God.
Think about it. Think about
I'm,
how many people
I'm, smoke. I'm impressed. I've met someone more cynical than I am.
You know, think of all the people that smoke, okay? That
yeah.
eliminates that entire cadre right off the bat.
Oh, okay. Bullshit.
What, you think smoking is good for you? You
think
smoking
think
is
it,
in your best
I,
interest?
I think a couple of things about that. One, I think that I'm an adult and I can make my own choices.
If you want
Two,
to suggest to me that
no,
if
wait,
you...
Doug, I
wait
ain't
a second,
done.
Wait a
I ain't
if you
done
want,
yet,
no, wait
Tracy.
A second. If you
I
want
ain't
to,
done.
If you want to suggest to me that you believe smoking for yourself is in your best interest, I will
sure.
accept that. I will accept
sure.
that. If you suggest to me that smoking is in your best interest.
Yep.
I will only ask you to define the goal that defines that best interest that you are satisfying by smoking.
Corporal happiness now?
Oh, sorry. That doesn't
what?
Apply to a goal.
Oh, sure it does.
Nope.
Yep. Absolutely. Tracy, you can't define my goals for me.
I can define the word goal.
Yeah, you can define the word goal. You cannot define what I choose to set as a goal.
Are you going to suggest to me that having a pleasurable cigarette smoke is a goal?
For that moment, yeah.
I'm going to suggest to you that your inability to function in a reasonable sense where goals are concerned makes any further conference with you on the idea of goals to be a waste of time.
And
you certainly don't
understand and I will apply your own standard to that. I should give a shit.
Yeah, that's exactly correct.
That's exactly correct.
You know, but I'm going to suggest that, all right, then if your goals tend to be immediate,
only
you know,
in that
I'm
case.
Going to start. I'm going to start asking other questions.
Sure. That's fine, because while that may be an immediate and recurring goal, that doesn't mean that I can't have midterm and longer-term goals.
That's true.
Yep.
So as far as I'm concerned, my criteria suggests that that goal is nonsense.
Yeah, that's
because
fine.
Because it is a self-limiting goal.
Really?
Certainly.
Hmm. And you base that on what?
Let me see the statistical odds that you will die of cancer at an earlier age because you smoke on a recurring basis is like, you know, 50 or 60% probability.
Earlier than what?
Earlier than you might would have expected otherwise.
Unless I happen to get into a fatal car crash tomorrow, right?
Then, you know, your own actions have precipitated that particular goody, too.
No, I'm not at fault. Somebody came in and T-boned me off a cliff. Tracy, that's... Look, first off, there is a high genetic component of all cancers.
Absolutely.
Does smoking tend to exacerbate those? If you have them, yes, it does.
Yep.
But if you do not have those CA genes, or you have them in the wrong pairs, or
you
have
be
them
Burns
in the odd locations,
until you're 93.
That's exactly right.
Right.
So when I digest all of that information, I'm saying, yep, I have a lifestyle that potentially could shorten my life versus what is the pleasure that I derive from it now. Oh, and by the way, did you also know that smoking, nicotine, has some beneficial side effects too?
It has been my experience that there is every bad thing has a good root.
Yep.
And every good thing
mm-hmm.
can have a bad outcome.
Yep, absolutely.
It is not that which proceeded into a man's mouth that causes him harm, but that which proceeded out.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
So, I, you know, the point of view for me is, you know, I'm going to pay attention, you know, to other people, how they define themselves.
Yep.
I will judge them by that definition. I don't judge them by myself. But at the same token, my set of criteria, is not supported by the general conception that I am
mm-hmm.
a nice person.
Well,
I'm nice in as much as, you know, the average person is of little value and little threat.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no energy to waste, you know, in negative ways towards those people.
Sure.
You know, it is simply easier and more efficient to be nice to people so they can get done with what they need to get done and get out of my way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. They're safely ignorable.
Right.
No threat
to honor. Are you okay, dog?
Oops. Is the dog making funny noises?
Yeah, like throwing up noises, but I think what he was actually doing was eating a box. His ears are down right now. Like, I didn't mean to. I really didn't mean to.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. Tell me I'm a good boy, please.
So, you know, but that's also why I have a tendency to be less willing to ascribe, you know, bad things to Obama. You know, he has stated his, you know, moral and ethical framework.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent that I have been able to determine what those are and view his actions, he's acting consistently with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my personal point of view is that if you establish a set of, you know, guidelines or principles that you're going to act by and you continue to act by them,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to concede that you're doing exactly what I do.
Okay.
I might think that those guidelines are, you know, stupid and pathetic, but that's my attribution, you know, to your principles, and that's
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to do that.
Mm. See,
so
and
Barack
I don't have
Obama,
any problem doing that.
Right.
I don't have a problem calling out stupidity when I see it.
Right, because usually stupidity is quite clear. Hey, I'm going to be a good driver. And then I
mm-hmm.
watch them with the phone, and they're reading the computer, and they're weaving all over the place.
And they're on Twitter and all that kind of stuff, all
yeah,
while going down the freeway at 65. Yep.
Right, you know, stupid is as stupid does. I mean, you know, the question the cops ask me, the question that the insurance people ask me, you know, did you have a cell phone in the car? Yes. Were you using it? No. Where was it, you know, at the time of the accident? In my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
the you know, it is a, you know, yeah, you know, Barack Obama says I'm a socialist, even though he didn't, but everything he has done and said and suggested otherwise say that he is.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that he's doing, which is consistent with that, with those sets of principles that he has clearly articulated,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm certainly not willing to ascribe Hitler to, you know, he said I'm going to do this and this is what he's doing. What's your problem?
Well,
you may
Hitler,
not like what he's doing.
Hitler said the same thing. He said
right,
what he was going to do.
And he did it.
You're right.
I mean, you may not like it, but, you know, mm-hmm. I can certainly recognize the consistency.
Well, yeah, that doesn't make it any less stupid.
I will suggest to you that I don't necessarily consider that specifically stupid, unless it is clearly stupid in as much as the result is diametrically opposed to what you say the principle stands for. Someone tells me that smoking is good for them and they're going to continue to smoke, I'm going to sit there and go, nah, stupid.
He
thinks socialism is good. He abides by that principle. He's going to act on that principle. I'm going to say, you know, I think that's a principle. Man, he's working on his principles. I don't think that's stupid, but I'm certainly not going to let him do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because his principles interfere with my rights.
Mm-hmm. And that makes it wrong.
And that's a violation of my principles.
Mm-hmm.
Tracy rule number 2, allow no harm.
Okay.
Tracy number 2, allow no harm. Harm is defined as those actions that preclude my ability to proceed towards the goals that I have set for myself.
Hmm.
I can't stop somebody from shooting me from, you know, across the street when they weren't aiming at me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stop somebody from turning left in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are harms that are, you know, not within my control.
Right.
You know, an abusive husband, I have control over that.
Right.
I can walk away.
Yes.
Okay. Those types of harms, those events and actions that prevent me from working towards or attaining those goals, which are, by definition of mine, what is in my best interest. My best interest is defined by those goals that I've set for myself. Harm is impacting, preventing, or eliminating the ability for me to work towards those goals. And that harm I need to prevent. Therefore, when Barack Obama decides that he's going to create a socialist environment in the United States, that
mm-hmm.
interferes with my goals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That prevents me from functioning in a way that, you know, encourages me towards getting towards those goals.
Mm-hmm.
So that's he might be a principled person, and I can appreciate the fact that he's a principled person. But those goals that he has set, you know, are interfering with my goals, and I will not tolerate that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the problem with my rules is they require a lot more thinking and work.
They require a lot more thinking and work than most folks nowadays are accustomed to. That's true.
Yeah, or willing to do.
Yeah.
Right. But you know what? I don't think it's anything more than a normal adult would do.
Well, yeah. In fact, I don't know if you've ever had occasion to do so, but I am always amazed when you look at a curriculum from 1880 and compare it to a curriculum today in schools. Young,
oh, yeah.
You know, third, fourth, fifth grade, that long in there. Quantum differences in what was required of the student.
It's pretty famous as far as the internet is concerned. The 1895 Kansas 8th grade graduation exam.
Ah. I don't know that I've seen it, but yeah.
If it's there. It's Kansas 8th grade graduation exam from 1895.
Wow.
It's online, and CJ found it about 3 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and she said, I can't answer any of these questions.
Oh, my gosh. I'll bet that did not sit well with her.
Did not sit very well with her. And so we actually, she actually printed it out, and we spent two evenings working through it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will be honest. I would have failed that test.
I am sure that I would also.
But I did, you know, I probably got somewhere close to between 50 and 60%.
Wow. Yeah. Yep.
You know, partially because I pretty much aced the history part.
Ah, okay.
Save my ass. And let me tell you, 2 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to do that.
Wow. Wow.
You know, my own research over the last year and a half has you know, increased my knowledge as far as that is concerned. And doing her homework with her over the course of the last year,
mm-hmm.
You know, we did mostly, you know, American history up until the Civil War, which, you know, 1895 took care of, you know,
yeah.
a significant portion of that. So,
sure.
You know, but, you know, there were certain things that, you know, that I wouldn't have studied and didn't study.
Mm-hmm.
So I had problems with that. But, you know, she was not happy about the fact that, you know, there was little or nothing she could do about it.
Wow.
You know. Wow. And then some of the stuff is, you know, there is a certain sets of assumptions on certain information, such as, you know, the math portion assumed a knowledge of how much a bushel of wheat is.
Yeah, right.
You know,
60 pounds.
You know, how much,
yeah.
you know, how much weight is a bushel of wheat.
Right.
You know, and given the time frame, you know, especially in Kansas, you know,
mm-hmm.
that would be as much common knowledge as, you know.
Oh, sure.
You know, 16 fluid ounces.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, where, you know, that knowledge certainly wasn't within me. I mean, you know,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know how much bushel of, you know, wheat weighs, so
mm-hmm.
it was be something that I would have to go up. But I could certainly, you know, use, once I had that piece of information, do the rest of the calculations.
Sure. I mean, math is,
you
math.
Know. Yeah, math is math. You know. So, but, you know, it's on there. Feel free to do so.
I will do that.
Yeah, you're right.
What is CJ doing about that, by the way?
I don't, you know, I've tried to do a couple things during the summers with her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've read it. You may have seen the book Cultural Literacy.
Yes.
Ed Hirsch.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Hirsch, Cultural Literacy. Well, I read that a long, long time ago, and at the back of his book, he has some 5,000 items that he considers to be necessary for cultural literacy.
Okay.
Well, I took that list and went through that list.
Mm-hmm.
And in, you know, 10 or less words, tried to give a definition or speak upon that particular item,
mm-hmm.
and see how many I knew. You know, and the answer was over 90%.
Cool.
And I think a relatively reasonably well-educated person would have a similar result. There were certain areas that I had better knowledge in than other people. Believe it or not, science and business, you know,
mm-hmm.
Obviously were places that I had a greater knowledge. The one that I always use as an example that drives most people crazy because they have no idea what I'm talking about. Let me see how well you know your world, your cultural
okay.
literacy. If I said the phrase wave-particle duality, what would I be talking about?
Well, physics is a starter. So that would have to, if with wave particles, you're talking about quantum physics. Beyond
only
that,
one word is required.
Physics.
Light.
Ah, okay. Well, that's part of physics. Okay.
Yeah, but it's specifically
right.
You know, a characteristic of light.
Huh. Wave-particle duality. Hmm.
Light
okay.
behaves as a wave. It has
mm-hmm.
frequency. It also acts as a particle. It can be divided.
Yes, it can.
It is.
Yes.
It is one of the few things in nature that has a duality of characteristic. So, in any case, I understood what that was.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
the average person, nah.
Nah.
You know, but, you know, I've used an example for a long time with CJ. I said, you know, and it's one that he, you know, that Hirsch uses in the book. You know, if I say, yeah, there's stories like Romeo and Juliet. If you lack cultural literacy, the analogy means nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get nothing from that, from the use of that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
But if you understand the story of Romeo and Juliet, then you understand what I'm trying to bring across, which is, of course, what Hirsch is trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted her to spend a summer, this was about 2 summers ago, with that book, writing a word down,
mm-hmm.
and on a lined piece of paper, she couldn't use more than the line.
Ah.
You know, she would write the word at the beginning of the line, and then she would have to write something about it. You know, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I used wave-particle duality, and I said, you only need to put one word in there, light.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some would take more. You know, if I gave you the number 1066, what would that number mean to you?
Magna Carta.
Right. Okay? So, you know, that's, again, you know, that's the only thing that would be necessary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
So, I've tried to do that with her.
Mm-hmm.
She's a little bit more open to it at this particular point in time because she thinks that her education is somewhat lacking.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that was why I asked, because once you come up against an 1895 final exam that you know nothing on, that's got to be an eye opener.
Right, you know, and of course, you know, you've probably been doing the same thing all, you know, whenever they post the story about, you know, a survey of college students has found that, you know, 23% of them can point out where Iran is on the globe.
Yeah.
You know. And I'm going, like, that many?
Yeah, really.
That many?
And, yeah. I'd be more impressed if they hadn't labeled the countries for them.
Yeah. So,
oh God!
You know, but that is consistent with other things. But
yeah.
All right.
Okay, kiddo. Good show.
Have a week.
And I will talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
See you on the board.
You betcha.